let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Great to have you with us coast to coast This Week in America. Elizabeth Clayton began teaching at the age of 20 at the University of Southern Mississippi. Now retired, spending her days reviewing, preparing her works for publication. A truly remarkable writing career, published nearly 20 works, primarily poetry, starting with the release of her autobiography, I, Elizabeth, that we'll talk about on today's program. She wrote it in 2007. The book we'll be discussing today chronicles her struggles with bipolar disorder. Inducted into the Literary Hall of Fame Sigma Kappa Delta in 2012, nominated for the Eric Hoffer Award by her publisher in the summer 2013 quarter of Forward Magazine, her work Scarlet Flow that we discussed several weeks ago was shown in the World Book Fair in London in 2013, receiving the Golden Seal of Excellence Award in 2014. Also in 2014, Elizabeth was featured in two New Voices, New Perspective segments. Quiet Sheba, a trilogy, was completed in early 2016. She received the Golden Seal of Excellence Award from her publisher. And her work, We Lesser Gods, published in summer 2016, its addendum receiving the Golden Seal of Excellence Award in the summer of 2017. Back with us on This Week in America, Elizabeth Clayton, author of I, Elizabeth, a dark comedy, The Gathering of Bipolar Thoughts. And she's our guest today on This Week in America. Elizabeth, it is always a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you.
This is such an important book and an intensely personal book. Talk about the decision to write this book. It couldn't have been an easy process, I assume, for you to go through.
No, it was not. I altered many times, but my psychiatrist at that time, he was new to me. He was from Rhode Island, I believe, but he didn't know about Mississippians, but he thought that we were good writers, and he asked me to write for him, and I did. And he said, oh, you should be publishing, and I didn't think much of that. And he kept on, and he would say, after several sessions, and he got to know me a little better, he said, is this the Elizabeth that I talk to? You can't write a book? And he kept on. I would never have published anything had it not been for John Norton.
Well, and it's so important because you were touching so many people with the book, I, Elizabeth, The Dark Comedy, The Gathering of Bipolar Thought. It's available at Amazon, and you can link on directly to get information on this book and all the other books that Elizabeth has written by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's do a little bit of background here. Talk about your life as a child, how that shaped you, and then up to 1965, when things really sort of spiraled out of control for you.
I was born after the end of the Depression, after the wars, to poverty, rural poverty. My father and mother were both uneducated, and I don't know if there were a star above our head or what, but my mother and father were very able people, very, very able intellectually, and they were very gifted in the fine arts. And they could sing, read music, paint, whatever. And they were determined that they would not stay where they were. And they were almost monomaniacal about it. It didn't matter who was lost in the process. And I was lost. I was the only one. But they were determined they had come in. And so they farmed for a few years, and then my father decided he wanted to go into the ministry, and he had to go back to school. He graduated as president of his class with honors, and so did my mother, and all of their children have taken their baccalaureates, and I've taken my graduate work, and so the years just passed, and we just worked very hard and lived very frugally.
In the book, you talk about the main falling down, the main issues occurred in 1965, although symptoms appeared much earlier. Talk about that and what the symptoms were, and they really brought, at least for a while, a halt to your life, didn't they?
Yes, my first symptoms that I recall appeared when I was in about the seventh grade. And, that was not the era of psychology yet, not yet. And So I didn't know anything about what was happening to me, and I knew that I felt strangely. I felt alienated, and I was experiencing depersonalization or dissociation, but I didn't know those words. I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't old enough to even be taking a psychology course. But I would call my mother to my bed and say, "Mama, I just don't feel well. I feel strange." And she would sleep with me until I went to sleep, and then she would go back to her bed. And so that would happen just every so often. And as the anxiety of Daddy's school and the lack of money, the lack of everything, as the anxiety grew, my symptoms grew. So that by the time I was a junior or senior in high school, I cried almost every day. I was deeply depressed. Anyone who had any education in the area would have known that I was really ill. And so I married, unfortunately, and I finished my graduate work, and I came home from a meeting, and the dissociation simply would not go away that night.
With us on the program once again, Elizabeth Clayton. She's the author of I, Elizabeth, The Dark Comedy, The Gathering of Bipolar Thought. Information available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. The book's available at Amazon. Talk about at that time, because this was a number of years ago when you got the diagnosis and the medication. What did, from what I understand,
well,
it was rather ineffective at the time.
That night, I didn't sleep at all that night. But I had one friend who understood my feelings. I had just said a few things to him, my gynecologist, and I called him the next morning, and he said, "Well, this time I can't help you, but I know someone who can." So he called Dr. Bruce Sutton, who had just left the state mental hospital, and he had gone into private practice, and he saw me that afternoon, and he asked me, he said, "Well, Mrs. Clayton," I wasn't Clayton then, I was Smith, "Mrs. Smith," he said, "what seems to be the problem?" And I said, "Well, the back part of my mind is taking over the front part of my mind." And he said, "Oh, I see." And I couldn't look in the mirror, because the face in the mirror was not me. My hands were disjointed from my body. I was fragmenting badly, badly. And if I had not seen Dr. Sutton that day, I don't know what would have happened to me. He saved me from dying on the back chronic wards of a state mental hospital, because I would never have been anything but chronically ill.
What treatments were available at that time?
Nothing. Not anything. Lithium had not been allowed to be used yet. It was within a year, and Dr. Sutton used it. But he just gave me every tranquilizer that he could. I've taken more medicine than anybody in the world, almost. I don't have a stomach anymore. But I left my husband in Brookhaven and traveled about 50 miles to Jackson, the capital of the state, where Dr. Sutton was practicing, so I could be near him. And he looked after me. My husband would come up to take me home. That was back in a time when women were supposed to do what their husbands said. And he was just going to take me home. Well, Dr. Sutton saw to it that he didn't do anything. And I was there near him, and I went to work for one of the first of the Great Society programs that Lyndon Johnson put into place, and it was in Mississippi and Jackson.
How did you juggle? I mentioned at age 20, your teaching in college, the great success that you had, the creative side. You mentioned that you've been actively a painter, a sculptor, ceramics, music, obviously reading and writing that we've talked about. How were you able to balance that with the symptoms you had of bipolar?
Well, I don't think manic in the full sense of the word. I was just agitatedly depressed. I knew something was happening in the back of my mind. I knew there was a realization that I was going to have to face, and I didn't want to. I was denying, I was rationalizing, I was doing all those things, but I couldn't face it yet, and I still can't face it. And I think it's death. I think that's what it is, really. When I realized that all that I had been taught in church and school and work and faith and all of that, that's all just something that we just pass through. It's not, we don't know enough to even write about it, although much has been written. But those three, I lost my faith. I lost everything.
And you've
because everything was bound to my faith.
And you've done so much. You mentioned there wasn't a whole lot written and still a lot of mysteries surrounding this. You've done so much to shed a light on it from a different perspective. You had written that to the bipolar mind, a day is measured in glory or ashes only. Nothing in between can be known. Talk about what that's like, glory or ashes, or either or.
Well, there is no medius. There is no medium. A bipolar person is intense, terribly intense. That's one reason people don't like to be around them very long at a time, even when they're being managed, even when they're under control, because everything is just so, that there is, it's like their hearts are about to burst with life, and they cannot get it all in because they know eventually facing them is death. And we don't know what's on the other side. We don't know. But we know how beautiful it is on this side when we're up. And we want to take it with us if we can. But a lot of people don't get into that. I don't think a lot of people even think about heaven or dying or anything else. They buy a lot of insurance. They do things like that. But they don't make any really serious attempts at understanding what it's going to be like. And so the bipolar person just feels very deeply, I've got to think this through and I've got to understand it.
The book is I, Elizabeth, A Dark Comedy, The Gathering of Bipolar Thought. Elizabeth Clayton, our guest and the author. You'll find information at Amazon, and you can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on directly. Get information not only on I, Elizabeth, but all of the books by Elizabeth Clayton. You talk about the number of friends that you had. You enjoyed entertaining when the mood is good. Otherwise, you enjoyed time alone. Talk about that, the balance and the socialization aspect of bipolar.
Well, a bipolar person, I think, I mean, all bipolars are not alike, and they're not all different. We have our own little special ways, but bipolars have to think things through. Oh, I do. My favorite sport is thinking. And I have to go as far out as I can, Unterspitze, so to speak, as the Germans say, on the point. I've got to get on the point so I can see as much as there is to be seen. But you know what I've realized in the last years is this, that I cannot do that because by the time I get Unterspitze, everything has changed some. I have changed. The way I look at my perception has changed. The circumstances have changed. And so we're not meant to understand everything. We're not meant to know everything. And that's part of the problem of the bipolar person. He wants to know. He wants to feel it all.
It's been said that you really challenge the reader to discard the victim mentality so common in patients with psychiatric illness. Talk about that, because you never fell to that, it appears, for the victim mentality. How did you not do that?
My parents had two religions. One, they became Christians not very long after they married, and the other was work. And they did not... They did not think there was anything that they could not accomplish if they were good about it and worked hard at it. And they taught us that. And we didn't give up. We never gave up. We just never did give up. It was, my parents were absolutists. It's good or it's bad. You're going to be good. You're going to be good. And that's one of my problems with men. My father never told me he loved me. My father never touched me. And when I took him my report cards with all high marks, he would say, well, what else should it be? I never received the appreciation I thought, I guess,
right,
that I was supposed to have from a male in authority.
In the book, there's a section there written by Dr. John Norton, who has worked with you and talked about how encouraging it is and how much he's learned about you and bipolar from having you in his life as a patient. It says it gives readers an understanding of the blessings and the pitfalls of an illness that affects 2% of the population. We understand certainly the pitfalls. Are there blessings that come with this as well?
Well, there is a high correlation between creativity and bipolar illness. There's not a causality relationship because every bipolar is not creative and every creative person is not bipolar. But there is a great, great correlation between the two. And I was one of the ones that did have the correlation. Beauty is what keeps me going. Beauty is my antidote to despair. And I like to create beauty. I like to observe beauty. I like to read beauty. It restores me. And that's a blessing to me that some people don't ever really get to enjoy.
A couple minutes left in the program, going by too quickly. You mentioned in the beginning your reluctance to write this book. Going back in writing the book, reliving your life and your emotions as you went through this period and looking back in your life up to now, and I know you go back periodically and you look at the book. You did it again before we got ready to discuss it on the program. What has writing the book, this whole experience, been like for you? Has it been beneficial, do you think, from your standpoint, to go back and look at where you've been?
Yes, it has been beneficial because it has caused me, if you put something, you may know this, when you're studying, if you put a word down to remember, it's easier to remember it.
Yes.
If you write it. And so, as I wrote these little vignettes at the beginning and so forth, I relived those, and I was surprised that I hurt very deeply. But it was a sweetness. It was a sweetness. And I said, I have something that no one can take from me. There's a blues sentiment that goes like this, which I used to listen to when I almost lost my leg. Throw it all away. Hold your hands wide open. For you cannot ever lose a thing if it belonged to you.
Well, that's an appropriate way to end our conversation. It's a story of survival and success. It's a very important story. I, Elizabeth, a dark comedy, the gathering of bipolar thought. Elizabeth Clayton has been with us once again on the program. This book and all of her books you'll find at Amazon. You can link on directly to all of the books at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Elizabeth, I know this was difficult to go back and go through that period again, but it's going to be helpful to so many people. Thank you, as always, for being with us on the program. Always a pleasure to have you with us on the show.
Thank you so much.
It is our pleasure. In the book, once again, I, Elizabeth, A Dark Comedy, The Gathering of Bipolar Thought. Elizabeth Clayton has been our guest on the program. Information, of course, and link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.